So this is February 1st, 2021, Hillsborough, North Carolina. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 23, Text 31. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Atayo Navyasur Suryuran.
Atayo Navyasurayam.
Prithir Bhartir Sutadaya.
Prithir Bhartir Sutadaya.
Lokashavo Mayopeta.
Lokashavo Mayopeta.
Deva Apyan Manvate.
Deva Apyan Manvate.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said. Hatayaha. Your husbands. Na abhyasuryuran.
Na abhyasuryuran.
Will not feel inimical.
Not feel inimical.
Pitru Bhaktir Sutta Adayaha.
Pitru Bhaktir Sutta Adayaha.
Your father's brothers, sons, and others. Lokaha. The general populace. Cha. Also. Vaha. Towards you. Maya. By me. Upataha. Advised. Devaha. The demigods. Api. Even. Anumanvate.
Regard favorably.
EBT translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, rest assured that your husbands will not be inimical towards you, nor will your fathers, brothers, sons, other relatives, or the general populace. I will personally advise them of the situation. Indeed, even the demigods will express their approval. So let's go to Srila Prabhupada. Krishna book. Okay, I have a message here. There is a label on the bottom dials that says Mayapur volume, turn it up.
Yeah, it's all the, there's something wrong with the, probably the camera volume.
Okay. Whatever it is, it is. So, Krishna book. The Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, my dear wives of the Brahmanas, rest assured that your husbands will not neglect you on your return, nor will your brothers, sons, or fathers refuse to accept you. Because you are my pure devotees, not only your relatives, but also people in general, as well as the demigods, will be satisfied with you. Krishna is situated as a super soul in everyone's heart, so someone who becomes a pure devotee of Lord Krishna immediately becomes pleasing to everyone. The pure devotee of Lord Krishna is never inimical to anyone, nor can any sane person be an enemy of a pure devotee. Okay, so if we look at commentary of Sanatana Goswami, they will not find fault with you, na abhyasuryuran. Rather, they will accept you. The others will not find fault in you by my influence of bhakti. Your actions are permitted by me as antaryami. That means the super soul. Antar means within. Yami means the witness or the witness within. Directly arranged by me. The devatas who are my devotees in Satvagun will not find fault in you. Rather, they will praise your devotion to me. That is also directed by me. Or what can be said about husbands and others? Even the devatas with pious bodies, depending on piety, by enjoying the results of sacrifice, will not find fault with you for giving up the sacrifices performed by your husbands. The husbands and others will definitely not find fault. Rather, they will approve of your conduct and give you special respect. Or since you associated with me, Maya Upetaha, the devatas will respect you. What to speak of the husbands. So, Jiva Goswami says something a little similar, but I thought there was some also. He says, they will have affection for you by the influence of my permission. Sridhar Swami also says that Maya Upeta means the Lord accepted their fault, which is interesting. He also explains that at that moment, Krishna saw the devatas and pointing them out, like, there are the devatas, said that even the devatas approved of their conduct, or maya upeka can mean you associated with me. Having associated closely with me, your husbands will not find fault with you, since they will know that I am the Supreme Lord. Since the devatas, when they saw in sacrificial actions, also respect me as the Supreme Lord. Okay, I think what I'm going to do here is... see if that works, just have her on the phone. All right, so here the wives of the brahmanas are really worried about whether or not they're going to be accepted by their families and by society. Because Krishna's telling them to go home, and they're saying, we don't want to go home. If we go home, then nobody will accept us. So you mute on your end, but you can hear me here, okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. So they're really worried about being accepted and about belonging. And this is a natural thing that we want to be accepted, isn't it? Right? We can say that as human beings, we're social animals. We're social animals. We're herd creatures. Not being accepted is the worst thing. There's a fascinating book. I can't remember exactly the name of it. I read it at my father's house decades ago. About this man who was able to train wild horses in a half an hour without violence. And his father had beaten the horses and tied them up and put, you know, cloths over their head, and it would take 6 months to tame a wild horse. But he could do it in a half an hour without violence. He became a very famous person, ended up being invited by the Queen of England and so forth. And how he did it was he watched horses in the wild. Because his family used to capture wild horses and tame them. And he saw that the biggest thing for a horse was being part of the group. And he watched the head of the group, the head mare, who would, that's N-A-R-E, not N-A-Y-O-R, who would give these subtle signals to the horses to let them know whether or not they were accepted. And he was saying, if you're a herd animal, if you're not accepted, then you're going to be in danger. You're going to be picked off by a predator. So that it was very important for these... as soon as the horse thought, you know, oh, I have to be accepted by this human, I have to be accepted by this human, then they were immediately tame. So we can say on a biological level, human beings are social animals. It's very hard for us to exist independently, completely on our own, like some Robinson Crusoe. And so we have a desire for acceptance. But we could ask, is this merely biological? Because some creatures are not like that, like the little shrew creature. It only associates with other shrews briefly for mating, and that's it. It doesn't even form family units. You know, so there are some creatures that they're not social. Or we could say, well, it's just a biological happenstance that we want to be accepted. But we do have our original acceptance spiritually, isn't it? Yes? When Bhaktivinoda details the 11 aspects of identity, one of them is what group we belong to. We all belong to a particular group. There's groups of gopis, there's groups of cowherds, there's groups of cows. Prabhupada explains how Krishna, he's calling his cows using jeweled japa beads. Right? So on our japa beads, we're chanting Hare Krishna, and on Krishna's japa beads, what is he chanting? Hamsi, right? He's chanting the names of his cows. But he's chanting the group leaders' names. So he chants the names of the group leaders, and then all the groups go with him, because there's a group. So we have a natural desire to be accepted. We have a natural desire to belong. It's very frightening to us to think we won't belong. So the wives of the brahmanas, when Krishna tells them to go home, they say, we can't go home. If we go home, nobody will accept us. We won't belong anywhere. Right? And Arjuna talked about this, didn't he, in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Where he says, my dear Krishna, if I'm not successful in surrendering to you, and in the process, you know, I haven't done anything materially, I'll be just like a floating ribbon cloud. I won't have any position anywhere. So these Brahmana wives are also thinking something very similar. You know, we've given up our families to surrender to you, and now you're rejecting us. So we're going to be nowhere. We won't belong anywhere. And this is, it's something that really motivates us in our life, isn't it? I mean, if we think about how many of our actions, how many of our words, how much of our thoughts involved, are other people going to accept me? What are other people going to think of me?
Mahalakshmi, you have to mute yourself.
What are, you know...
Yeah, otherwise I'll have to disconnect you.
So, it's something that's very much a prominent part of our lives, isn't it? Yeah? I mean, we might say, well, I don't care what anybody thinks, but that's not really true. Then we belong to the group of people who don't care what anybody thinks. Right? Isn't it? Right? We belong to the rebel group. And there's groups of rebels where everybody, you know, wears old, torn, funky clothing and dreadlocks and has tattoos all over their face and says, we don't care what anybody thinks. But they care what their group thinks. You know, they have to be cool to their group. So one of the major steps in spiritual life is changing our group identification. This is the second big step. There's Anushraddha, and then there's... What's the next one after Anushraddha?
Sadhu
Sangha. Where we start associating with other people who are interested in spiritual life. Now, in Anushraddha, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, there's practically no removal of materialism and anartas. That's just like, yeah, I believe in God. What do you do about it? Nothing. I go to church on Christmas, or you know, I go to the temple on Janmashtami or something. I believe in God. I believe that there's a spiritual process. You know, I believe in spirituality. I believe. Maybe I have a picture in my house, you know. Maybe I have a picture of Krishna or a picture of Jesus or something. I believe. But what are you doing? It's like if I say, yeah, I believe that there's a road that goes from here to California. You know, but if I'm not driving on the road, right, I believe California exists. I believe that there's a road that goes there. But Sadhu Sangha, you're starting to make a commitment. You're starting to change your friends. Which may mean leaving the sacrifices and the ceremonies and the stuff that materialistic people are doing and going to hang out with Krishna and his friends instead. That may be what it means. You know, your friends are throwing a party at the bar and you say, I think I'm going to go to the kirtan at the temple. You know, your parents are doing something, your family, you know, I have something else I want to do. I was talking the other day about this devotee I know whose husband was very inimical. And so she would lie to him. She was saying, you know, I'm going to go for a walk in the park and she'd be distributing the Prabhupada's books. So this is a big step. And it's a step that comes with a cost. Because the people that, you know, your old family and friends will start to say something after a while. Hey, why aren't you hanging out with us anymore? You become a little weird. What's around your neck? Why aren't you eating the things we're eating anymore? Something's funny with you. Now I start to talk about this or that and you're not interested. You don't want to go to... What's going on with you? Nothing's going on. But after a while, people will start saying something, isn't it? And they'll start saying, you know, if you're not going to drink anymore, there's no basis to our friendship. They'll start saying things like that. You know, if you just don't want to talk about the football game anymore, I mean, I don't think we have anything in common anymore. Or it may become even very aggressive. You know, we have these instances with it, even in the Shastra, it becomes very aggressive. Like Raghunath Das Goswami's family, who were religious and who were hosting Haridas Thakur, they were putting him practically under house arrest. That's pretty aggressive. We had instances in ISKCON of parents that we called deprogramming. You know, they would have the kids kidnapped and tortured, you know, not letting them sleep, not letting them have food, and so forth. You have to renounce your Krishna consciousness. So this is a big step. And as I say, it's a step with consequences. And there's many times that when people get to that step, they back off. They're interested in spiritual life, they're interested in God, but when it comes to changing their association, they try to do it. You know, they start doing it, and then their friends go, okay, forget it. Actually, in the very famous book, Pilgrim's Progress, about the allegory of Christian, and that's one of the first things he also has to face. You know, he says to his family, I want to find God. They're like, don't do it. You know? I mean, you can be a little religious here and there, you know, that's fine. We'll tolerate that. So there's this problem. And as I've said before, very few of us have a situation where every single person in our circle is supportive. Some people have that blessing. You know, maybe they're born into a family of devotees and they have an extended family of devotees and everybody at their place of work is supportive and they just don't run into unsupported people. They don't have to make that kind of a choice in their life. But that's very unusual. So I was thinking about instances in the Shastra. I was thinking of instances in the Shastra of two different things, of people who had this benediction of Krishna that he's giving to the wives of the brahmanas. Don't worry, everybody's going to love you. And it was hard for me to think of a lot of those. It's like, how many instances are there in the Shastra where somebody who's with materialistic people surrenders to Krishna and the materialistic people are okay with that? They accept them. I really couldn't think of too many examples other than the wives of the brahmanas, but I thought of some. I thought of Narada Muni. Maybe some of you can help me with other examples. Narada Muni is accepted by everybody. So Kamsa welcomes him. Hiranyakashipu welcomes him. I mean, he's a brahmachari, so he doesn't have a family. And he was just born from Lord Brahma's body, so he doesn't have like some family life. But everybody accepts him. The demons, the demigods, everybody. Nobody harasses him. Then I was thinking about Bali Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj, after Vamandev sent him to Patala Loka, he was still the king of the demons. And all the demons accepted him, and they even accepted having Vamana as the doorkeeper. I was thinking about the Patan soldiers. Actually, I didn't think of that. My friend Rukmini did, because I asked her for an example. So she said, what about the Patan soldiers that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought to Krishna consciousness? They ended up going to Afghanistan, and there in a Muslim country, they were preaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. I thought of Akura. Akura, everyone knew that he was a devotee of Krishna. And of course, Kamsa was using him for his own purposes, but Kamsa did accept him into his circle. Whereas like Kamsa, you know, imprisoned Vasudeva and Devaki, and most of the other devotees of Krishna fled from Mathura to other places. Anybody can think of any other examples where somebody becomes a devotee with inimical family, friends, or society, and the family, friends, or society say, oh, that's really cool that you're a devotee from the Shastra. Yeah.
I don't know exactly, but, you know, Vidura, he wasn't accepted because he was godly. And
he wasn't accepted.
Right.
But I'm asking someone who was. Someone who was just told, because that's what Krishna is telling the Brahmin's wives here. You're going to be totally accepted. The demigods are all accepting you, and your husband, sons, brothers, everyone's going to accept you. You're not going to have a problem. I was just thinking how unusual this benediction is. Okay, well, maybe I can think of some others. And I was thinking of lots of examples in the Shastra of the opposite, talking about Vidura, who was never really accepted by the Kurus. And of course, Kunti and the Pandavas, You know, you think her husband died, she has young children, she's going to be taken care of. But because they're all devotees of Krishna, Duryodhana and Dhritarashtras are very inimical to the point of trying to kill them. That's pretty extreme. Prahlad Maharaj, of course, where his father wants to kill him because he's a devotee. And Prabhupada often says, we have to be prepared that even our father will become our enemy if we become a devotee. Yeah? I was thinking about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that when he became a devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his son-in-law didn't accept him. His son-in-law, Amoga, was very inimical. And it was only when he was literally dying of cholera and Lord Chaitanya saved him that he changed.
Would Haridas Thakur be a good example?
Haridas Thakur is an extreme example where he was never accepted by the Muslim society. I mean, after he got beaten in 23 marketplaces, and he apparently died and then came back to life, apparently. Basically, I understand from that point the Muslim rulers left him alone. But I don't know if he was ever like really accepted in Muslim society. Mirabai is a very famous example. And Mirabai, who as a young girl decided she would marry Krishna, but politically she was married to, I think, Shaktas, worshippers of Durga. And again, she was really not accepted by her family and by society.
I wanted to roll back to the previous...
The ones who do get accepted?
Yeah, I was just thinking in the same regards to Haridas Thakur, Dvaita Acharya, he was quite a different kind... I mean, he's a devotee in a Smarta Brahmana community, which a lot of times Smarta Brahmanas were not very favorable for, like, Vaishnavas, you know? But they accepted Dvaita Acharya, and he even was friends with Haridas Thakur, which is also, like... considered.
That's a really good example. So I don't know if anybody can hear me anyplace else. But if anybody can hear me anyplace else. So Brajananda was saying, Prabhu was saying about Advaitacharya, that he was accepted by the local Smarthas even though he was friends with Haridas.
Yeah.
And that was very extraordinary. I was thinking about Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami is so fascinating because his father and brother were Vaishnavas. And they were Vaishnavas to the point that they were hosting Haridas. And they respected Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they were materialistic devotees. You know, like most people in the world who are religious. Most people in the world who are religious are materialistic. They're worshipping God for some benefit in the world. And I got this from my mother when I wanted to join ISKCON. She said, it's fine to be religious, but don't be extreme. You know, and this is very common. You know, Indian families who freak out if they think their kid's going to be a brahmachari. You know, we've had this situation. One of my very best friends is a devotee, is married to a devotee whose parents informed his spiritual master that if he were ever to put on saffron, that they were very influential people in Mumbai, that they would cause a big political stink. They'd go to the newspapers, they'd go to local politicians, they would do everything to ruin ISKCON. And then they were, you know, they were Vaishnavas. They were Vaishnavas. And so Radha Swami told his disciple, he said, look, you got to get married. You know, there's no question of moving into the ashram. Actually, I had a similar thing with Nisinganda, my godbrother, where his mother caused such a disruption that Prabhupada said, okay, don't live in the ashram.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very, very similar kind of a situation. So Raghunath Das Goswami's father and uncle were, as I say, putting Raghunath Das Goswami practically under house arrest. They were guarding him all the time. You know, I know Ridhananda Maharaj points out that there were obviously different norms in that society, because if today in America you did that with your adult children, that would be a crime. Right? And Rupa and Sanatana also, they were not accepted by their society because they had worked for the Muslims. Ironically, they worked for the Muslims in order to save the Vaishnavas, because the Muslim rulers said, you're so qualified, if you don't work for us, then we're going to kill the Vaishnavas. But still, the fact that they worked for the Muslims, they took on Muslim names. You know, I haven't been able to find any information at all, but it's said that they gave up their household life, so one can assume that perhaps they were married to Muslims. It's not really very clear what was happening there. And then Babishak. So this, when we used to perform the Ramayana, one of the most heartrending sections of it for me was when Ravana banishes Babishan, or really threatens Babishan, and then Babishan leaves. So Babishan keeps saying to Ravana, give Sita back to Ram, give Sita back to Ram, give Sita back to Ram. And he's presenting it from the point of view that if you don't give Sita back to Ram, our whole society is going to be vanquished. He's not saying give Sita back to Ram because we love Ramachandra. He's not coming at it from a bhakti perspective. And Ravana becomes so angry, very much like Duryodhana with Vidura, where he threatens Vibhishan with arrest. And so Vibhishan just leaves. You know, and then when he leaves, he joins Lord Ramachandra. Of course, that's kind of funny because he wasn't even accepted initially by the other devotees of Ram, even Lakshman. And then, of course, he became a traitor to the Rakshasas. So because Bhimishan was giving Ram's army secrets about the Rakshasas, you know, like especially with defeating Indrajit, Bhimishan is saying, I know where Indrajit's going now, he's going to this sacrifice, and when he does the sacrifice, he's going to be invincible, and that way they were able to kill Indrajit. And so, of course, Ravana was even more and more and more furious, you know, you become a traitor, you become a traitor. Of course, later, like Bali, when Babishan was made king by Ramachandra, then the remainder of the Rakshasas did accept him, that he was a Vaishnava king in their society. And then, of course, we have Vasudeva and Devaki with Kamsa, that Devaki was his cousin sister. They were family, right? But Kamsa, because there's this benediction that they have, that their eighth child will kill him, therefore he was, I mean, that's pretty severe, like kind of what Hiranyakashipu did to Prahlad sort of thing. You know, so that wasn't just a rejection, that was out and out violence. And we find that this is a price that most of us have to pay in some way or another. To let go of bad association or to be rejected by somebody because we want to be strict in Krishna consciousness. It's very rare that, like the wives of the brahmanas, we don't have to do that. There are people who have this benediction. You know, everybody will love you. Even people who are materialists, even people who aren't surrendered to me, even people who are superficial religionists, whatever, everyone's going to love you. No one's going to criticize you. So we shouldn't expect that we're all going to have that kind of benediction. And I hate to say this, but I think it has to be said. Even in our Krishna conscious society, not everybody's going to love everybody. You know, it's just what it is. Just what it is. I mean, there are people who are saying, to follow Prabhupada, no woman should ever sit on the Vyasasana and give class. I mean, there are people who say that. One of the people who says that most loudly was initiated at the same time as I was. Someone that I know personally, you know, we're friendly when we see each other. And one time, he was a town president, one time he invited me and said, please come to my center. And I said, what will I do there, Prabhu? I said, a wheat threshing machine is going to thresh wheat in heaven or in hell. What do you think I'm going to do? So it's like that. You know, even in our Krishna conscious society, there always will be differences of opinion about different things. And sometimes people get very aggressive about these things. Sometimes people get very, you know, emotional about these things. Whatever it may be. You're eating pizza, you're going to hell! You know? And you can't hang out with the pizza eating people anymore because, are you a pizza eating person? Yeah, just kind of what it is. So the main person we want to accept us is Krishna. We want Krishna and Guru to accept us. We can't... We ourselves shouldn't be inimical to anyone. Right? Prabhupada's saying the devotee isn't inimical to anyone. We were just reading in the 11th chapter, the end, a verse that Prabhupada says the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. You shouldn't envy anyone. You should be a friend to everyone. And one of our students says, why is that in person? Because it's essential that we shouldn't envy anyone. We shouldn't hate anyone. But we should expect that some people are not going to accept us. Some people are not going to feel that we belong to their whatever. And even in the spiritual world, there's groups that have different opinions about how to satisfy Krishna. It's rare that there's leelas where everybody is together. Like under Govardhan Hill is one of the few leelas where everybody is together. All differences of opinion about how to serve Krishna are put aside. But that's unusual. Even the Kaliya pastime, like Rohini was back cooking. I don't know about when Krishna goes to Mathura if everybody's there. But that's kind of agonizing. You know, all the gopis are together in Rasalila, but they're not always all together. Often different groups, different places that are competing. You know, or there's, like in the holy pastime in Nanda Vrindavan Champu, they're kind of together and then they're not, and they're kind of over here. And look, not everybody is surrendered to Krishna and accepts Krishna. You know, I don't know why we think that everybody has to love me. I have to get everybody to love me and everybody to accept me. Not everybody accepts Krishna. And he's perfect. I mean, I could give you a very long list of reasons why people shouldn't love me. But with Krishna, he's perfect. And still there are people who hate him and want to kill him and rebel against him. So this urge we have to be accepted, this concern, this anxiety we have, what will people think of me? To put it that to Krishna. Does Krishna accept me? Does Guru accept me? And other people, some of them will, some of them won't. Some of them will change. Somebody who loves us and accepts us today may not love us and accept us next week. Somebody who thinks we're terrible this week may love us next week. And that's just step two in our Krishna consciousness, this Sadhu Sangha. Saying, I'm going to go to Krishna even though some people may criticize me. Some people may not like me. Some people reject me. I'm still going to go to Krishna. I'm still going to make that step. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Every once in a while I get those, you know. Yes?
So, we can deduce, even though there's in the spiritual world there's so many groups that maybe aren't on the same page as Prabhupada to serve Krishna, that at the very least they would respect other service to Krishna.
Mm. So Leo Shakti is saying that in the spiritual world, although there's different groups with other opinions, they respect the other service to Krishna. There's no malice. There's no malice. But they may think the way I serve Krishna is better, otherwise they wouldn't do it. But there's no malice. And they certainly respect that, oh, those other devotees, they're also trying to serve Krishna. There's no demonizing and malice and envy and trying to smash somebody. That's gone. But they still may think my way of serving Krishna is better than their way of serving Krishna.
Oh my God.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.